Thank you for your service, and thank you everybody else that's here that's doing service because you're here. So I've been riding my bike. I'm going to pull in and park it now. Let's see. So I shaved and showered, worked on my hair mostly, but you know, I'm here tonight. So my name is Rick, and I have decided I am an agnostic alien striving to be a decent human being. Some days it works, some days it doesn't. But you know, that's making me more human, I guess. So anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you, Marcia, for asking me to speak. And for me, when I went to treatment, our counselor, my group had to share at all our meetings. So sharing is easy. Speaking is a little bit harder because I have to kind of dig and trace back where I've come from. So I guess I'll go back and start. We're all unique in our own way, from wherever we came from using alcohol, drugs, whatever. So, but I'm going to let you know how unique I am. So I started, my journey started in my youth, obviously. I started using at 14, and I've really been thinking about that in junior high, how depressed I was. And, you know, I wanted to fit in. I mean, let me start again. My dad owned his business and was building his business. So we had like a mountain cabin. And I remember everybody being inside the cabin laughing and having fun because we built Grandpa and Grandma's cabin first. There'd be like 20 people in there. And just like, I was standing outside in the freezing cold behind a tree. And I didn't fit in. I didn't want to be in there. And I know I was depressed. And I even did it at school. In middle school, I hid behind like the partition, you know, and in the lockers, I would hide. And I think that's why I started using. I'm working on and figuring out today why I started, and it's starting to make sense. I know how I did because I just put shit in my body, you know. We used, but anyway, it started with a pack of cigarettes out on the road with my friend in the snowy day, and they were like non-filter, and of course we lit up and smoked them. And wow, you got all dizzy and sick feeling and shit, you know, but we smoke more of them, you know. And I think that just led to where my addiction kicked in, and being depressed and wanting to fit in. Of course, cigarettes led to alcohol and to marijuana, and there I was off and running. But this is the funny thing about how unique I am. As I said, my dad was building his business, and I started working for him when I was 13. And it was probably child labor back then. I don't know. But I was a working, functioning kid at that time. And, you know, I was working, and I got everything I wanted. I guess I was spoiled. You know, who turns 16 and gets a brand new fucking pickup truck? You know, who gets brand new motorcycles? We raced motocross, and we traveled around and raced, and we camped and went riding and did all this stuff. But, you know, as I was thinking today, those days, you know, I had everything I wanted and could ask for. Of course, I worked for it too, you know, so it wasn't just given to me. But I was really thinking today that, you know, I never saw my dad and mom kiss, hug, say they loved each other, you know. And I think that's where I went off the rails and wanted to fit in, because I didn't feel I was loved, you know, at that time. And I think I was. But I think that they didn't know how to show it to each other. And then so thus, they probably didn't know how to show it to my brother and sister and myself, you know, in their way. So growing up, you know, finished high school, graduated, you know, did my thing, but at 18, I could not wait to get out of that house. You know, I found my freedom. I moved in with a guy that was 21 years old. So I had all the alcohol I wanted. You know, we sold, we dealt, we did all this stupid shit, you know, and did all that. And then, you know, I met my wife. You know, I think she fell for the bad boy, and I was living with a roommate, and we partied quite heavily. And, you know, we did her thing, and we got married and had one daughter, a beautiful daughter. And, you know, she stayed with me all these years. The daughter has been with me too. But in the meantime, when we found out we were pregnant, we were living in California. That's where we got married at. And this is where I feel shame, you know, a lot of shame. I left her pregnant, you know, and I came back to Washington to be with my fucking friends that I thought were friends, because they were more important to me than she was, and my baby that was on the way, you know. So that hurts me today to think about that too. But you know, I got her back up here into Washington State, and you know, she started doing her program, and I thought her program was about somebody else, but I think it was about me also. And you know, so she quit, you know, because she was pregnant, of course. Obviously the partying days were over for her, but not me. No, I wasn't ready yet. And really sad that I wasn't, but I can't go back and change things. You know, it is what it is. She reminds me I wasn't ready, and she's right. I wasn't at that time. And, you know, I went on and continued to use. You know, I did some really shitty things. And one thing I'll recall, and I haven't shared this with very many people at all. I took our daughter, I think she was, I don't know, 6 months old, year, I don't know. She was still in the car seat, I believe. And my birthday is on New Year's Eve, on the December 31st. So I took her with me. I forget where my wife was. She was out with some friends or something. And of course, I used all day, and I had to go out and party, and I was babysitting, and I guess, and I, from what I recall, and I took our daughter with us, and it was snowy and shitty. And, you know, my wife and my mom came and got her. You know, did I leave with them? No, I stayed, because my friends were more important to me at that time, you know. And then, I'm not sure if it was that night. It must have been that night. I ended up shooting a guy, you know. So you'd think I'd hit my bottom at that time, but no, I didn't. You know, and I was facing some serious jail time. But there again, with my dad being rich, I don't know if that helped me or not. You know, it cost me a lot of money for a lawyer, cost me some restitution, and more or less got out of it. I had to just do a year of probation, which was no problem, because I gave up my gun. I never wanted to have one again. But did I say no, I never wanted to have drugs again? No, not ready. So I continued on being stealing from my dad, lying to my wife, lying to my dad, being shitty, watching my daughter grow up. I think first 15 years of her life, I watched her at her events, but I wasn't there, because, you know, my mind, I was thinking of like, when is this going to be over? When can I leave? When can I go get some shit? When can I be with my friends? You know, really pathetic thinking. But then all one day, you know, and I'd been ready to quit. So let's see, I was probably, what was I, 39 I was probably ready to quit at 37 and a half, 38. You know, my drug of choice had me, you know, had me big time. You know, it wasn't, you know, how they say you got a monkey on your back. I had a fucking gorilla, you know. But I couldn't do it on my own. You know, I would go to bed at 2 in the morning, lay there, not sleep till 4, get up at 6 and go to work, you know, saying this is the end, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. By noon, I'd tell my dad I didn't feel good, I had to leave. Basically, I had to go get more shit and just do it again, you know, that roller coaster or spinning wheel, you know, that just goes round and round and I couldn't get off it. But luckily, one day my dad at work, he said, you're getting my car, let's go. I said, okay. So we went to, we were headed up the direction of our house. And like, wow, okay, this is weird, where are we going? Sure as shit, we went to my house. And I got the gift of an intervention. And I wanna thank my wife for that gift. You know, without her and my dad doing that intervention, I couldn't have did it. I don't think I would have died or went to jail, but I would have just stayed in the rut that I was in. And I probably, you know, would have been older and dumber and kept it up. But anyway, they didn't even have to tell me, you know, he told me, if you don't go to treatment, you'll never work for me again. And she told me, if you don't go to treatment, I'm leaving, you'll never see your daughter or whatever. And you know, I watched that show Intervention and I really love it. I cry at the end. But I embraced it. I said, thank you. Okay, I'm ready to go. And they spent the whole rest of the day on the phone trying to find a place for me to go and get a bed. And luckily they found one. And I went off the next morning for my adventure at treatment. And I embraced it. I totally took it all in, you know, and did what I was supposed to do, did what I was told, you know, did the steps there, did the meetings, shared, you know, and did what I was supposed to do. And what I did do over there, I did realize, luckily I was in a room in a separate wing by myself for like the first couple of weeks, because all the other, you know, with companionship or roommates, they were all full. But it gave me a chance, you know. I wrote a heartfelt letter to my dad, thanking him for what he did for me and apologizing to him because I blamed him for my using. And he didn't do it, you know. He didn't put the shit in my body, you know. I did it, but I blamed him, you know, because I felt that he didn't show the love. His love was his business that was more important to him growing up. But you know, he built a business, a thriving business, and you know. But, you know, I did that. That was important to me to do that. But I'll back it up a little bit too. When I was 21, I think, my mom and dad stayed married until my sister graduated high school. And then that's when they divorced. And my dad took me with him, probably so he wouldn't beat the shit out of my mom and dad's best friend that we caught with my mom. You know, they rolled up and he knew where her car was, and they rolled up and she was sitting next to him in the truck, and they had a blanket on the front seat. So they had been out the military base somewhere, probably out in the woods, whatever. But, you know, I thought that was shitty and that was hurtful. And you know, that, why did they do that? Well, they did it till my sister graduated. But then I thought, why didn't they do it sooner? You know, it might've changed our lives, but it was their deal. And like I said, you know, I didn't never see them being affectionate. And I think that hurt me in my life, my married life to my wife all those years. But anyway, so I got home at 39 and clean, you know. What I want to apologize to my wife for and let people know is that I didn't embrace recovery. How important is that word, recovery? So I did like a year and a half of, I did AA, and then I found Narcotics Anonymous, which was me, but I dropped out. I mean, I didn't feel I needed to go back because I was never going to use again. So I pulled into the the highway of recovery. I pulled into the rest area and I got stuck there for about 16 years, you know, and all this time I used my wife as my sponsor and, you know, I didn't change who I was and I didn't work on myself. I was clean. And that's what I knew I was going to be and wanted to be. But there's so much more that goes with it. And again, to her, I truly apologize that I didn't embrace the full gift that I was given. You know, but all these years, she stuck with me, you know. So I got back into the program. I can't remember. I think she told me, like, you better get your shit together and get back to meetings or whatever. And she was right. I knew I had to go back, and I did. And, you know, found my old home group and took over and started doing service work, which is really important to me today. I love service work. But, you know, I used her as my sponsor, and she would always, I would appreciate that. She would always call me on my shit, you know, because I didn't think that, you know, I needed a sponsor. And, you know, I'd already worked the steps, but, you know, oh, I guess some people do them once a year or whatever. And like, I don't know if that's for me or not. I did them a second time, but I don't know. You know, I'll wait till we get agnostic atheist ways of doing it, and I'll probably do it again. I don't know. But so anyway, as you can see, I'm a little bit older. So I started using a 14, used for 25 years. And yes, the end of February 27th, I celebrated 25 years not using. So, you know, I'm still doing it just like everybody else, one fucking day at a time. You know, I don't need coins. I don't need, you know, key tags. I don't need that. I carry the treatment center coin in my pocket. And I did have a beginner, you know, a welcome tag. I cashed that one in a few years ago when we were in Hawaii, because I went to a meeting there and I got a really cool Aloha one. So that's the two I carry in my pocket, you know, otherwise I'd be leaning to one side probably. But no, today is still, it's hard for me at times, you know. I strive to do recovery, but I don't know how to do it. You know, it's a learning process, even today, you know, but I really want to do it. I truly want to do it. And the wife and I are winding up. Or winding down, you know, our married life. But you know what? We're still married, and we'll be 42 years coming up in October. But we're going to end up being best friends, because, you know, we didn't start out as friends. You know, when we got married, it was no friendship there. You know. I'd say some other words and stuff, but I won't go there. it was the 80s, end of the 70s and the start of the 80s. So you guys maybe can figure that out. But yeah, today she's my friend. I look forward to seeing her and having breakfast. And, you know, she's at her house. I'm at my apartment. And, you know, I think we're both growing as people and individuals. I know she's doing I'm really proud of her. She's doing exceptionally well. I thought at first it would be, oh, come back. I need you, but well, that didn't happen, so it's okay. We're both gonna be happy, and we'll strive to better ourselves and think of all the good stuff we had in the past. The shitty stuff's gonna be there too, but that's on me. And I always thought that she didn't deserve me, but I believe I didn't deserve her. And I'm grateful for today. I'm grateful for my meeting, my home group. I'm grateful for people that I see on Zoom, and whether you have your picture up or you're live, it warms my heart, and I hope this COVID thing will be over. At first, when it started, we were all going to probably in-person meetings and things like that before Zoom really got popular. And at first, I was like, oh no, how are we gonna hugs and do all this stuff and welcome the newcomer, and I'm not gonna do Zoom. And like now, I don't think I can go back to an in-person meeting. I'm not ready yet. I will eventually, but the home group I was in, at church, wouldn't let us come back for 2 years. And then when we finally could, I waited. I was the GSR and stayed in touch and communicated and everything. And then they wanted to change our time to like the weekends. And like, well, I got my new home group, and I was willing to keep it alive and help them out. But I've had to step away. I have my home group now, and I'm happy. And I get to see. I see some friends that are here tonight that I see, and as I said, I'm a work in progress, and I hope to continue to be that way, because if I'm not working on myself, then I could probably get complacent, and I don't want to do that. I know I will never use again. I said that when I first went to treatment, that I already knew I would never use again. So nothing, I have no triggers that will trigger me, but I'm afraid of not being able to do recovery again like I did, because that's that won't help me at all. So I will continue to do that for sure. I'm totally grateful again, as I say, and I thought our daughter, I'm so proud of her. She's made a great life, and her and I are great friends also. Even though the years that I wasn't there for her, she has forgiven me, and we've made the amends, and we're all good friends, and everything is good. I have a great job. This is where my job is. Okay, so for my living amends are giving back to the youth. So I drive a school bus. Can you believe that? And I fucking love my job. I haven't missed, I think I'm going on my 11th year without missing a day. If I didn't tell you that I loved it, you'd probably think I'm fucking crazy. How can you drive 60 kids in a bus, and do that every day? And that's only for one school. Then I got three, four other schools, but I love my job. And my, part of my service work, I'm the juvenile coordinator for our area, for Pierce County, where I live. So the juvenile coordinator, I coordinate the volunteers. We can't go into the Raymond Hall. It's probably wherever you live, it's where the youth are incarcerated that are under 18 or 17, whatever it is. We can't go in there, so we're doing Zoom, and we're not doing as many Zoom meetings as I would hope for, but I look at it in a positive way, that there's maybe no youth that are incarcerated. Wouldn't that be great? you know, because they're our future. So for me, my living amends is giving back to the youth and the kids. And I have no problem with the high school kids that I drive. If I hear them talking about drugs or whatever, or alcohol, you know, I'll let them know where I came from. And now, you know, I have no problem talking to them, because I think my job is more than just driving them to school. You're a mentor, you're a counselor, you know, you're a babysitter, you know, you have to do all this stuff, because there's a lot of kids that come from one parent homes nowadays. And our district isn't the richest district, you know. So there's a lot of troubled youth, and I'm willing to be there for them, because I say that's the way I can give back, you know. And I'll be there for anybody. I always put out my number. If anybody needs my help, you know, like I tell people at meetings, I'm not here for me. I'm here for you, you know. That's all I can do, you know. And I tried, you know, and I love seeing Marsha. What she said is true. And, you know, she asked me to share a while back, and then it got double booked, so I could only do like a Monday night, because it is past my bedtime. I'll own that, you know. But luckily we're off this week. It's our spring break, so that's why I was able to do it tonight. And yes, I love seeing her. Like if I do share, when she cringes and just, you know, shakes her head, and you know, it's that's Marsha, and I love that. You know, she's a sincere, compassionate person, and you know, and she's the kind of person that will call you on your shit. You know, like I did Saturday at my meeting, trying to go the short version of, you know, hey, I know how to stay clean. Just don't fucking use today. Everything else I don't know shit about. Thank you for letting me speak. She said that wouldn't fly. You know, probably I'd have a record for the shortest speaker in history, but she said that wouldn't fly, you know. So, and she's right, you know. I could dig up much more in my past, but I'm a work in progress, and I've came to this meeting before. You know, when we're off on a Tuesday, you know, because I get up at 4 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, my time, no matter what, even if I'm not working, I still wake up at 4 in the morning. So I've come to this meeting before, and there's other meetings that I'm going to now. And there's one I really like on Friday night that can relate, is helping me find that child in me, what happened, what I, you know, what trauma and everything I went through, because all the counselors are booked now, you because of the pandemic. Good luck trying to find a marriage counselor or a counselor just to see yourself, to work on your, because they're full. I mean, I tell you, you know, trying three or four people, I'm on one guy's waiting list, but till that happens, you know, I have to do other things, and there's other meetings to help find my way. But I never believed. I always tramped it, put it all down, and kept it inside, and not thinking, you know, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't need to bring that out. Why bother? My mom and dad have long passed away, and you know, there's nobody else. Why? Well, my wife has helped me, said, yeah, I do. And I realize I do need to get it out there, to help me grow and heal and get healthy, because there's more than just health in you know, not using and being clean and free of drugs, alcohol, whatever, gambling, you know, whatever. There's so many addictions out there, but I know I need that today. And I know our meeting, we tell people we're not medical professionals, and we're not going to give you advice. You know, we just are going to be here for you and support you and love you and keep coming back, you know. So thank you. You know, I don't know where else to go, Marcia. I just want to say thank you. And I am so grateful to be asked to speak. It is an honor, truly, you know, whether you know what to say or not. It's an honor and a privilege. And I want to thank Marcia for inviting me to do this. And, you know, I will keep sharing. Like I said, I was taught that that's important. Very rarely do I sit in a meeting and just listen. The Friday night one I do. But in my regular meeting, yeah, I have to share. You know, it's important to me. That's about all I have. You know, thank you. Thank you again, everybody, for listening. And hopefully you got something out of it. If not, it's okay, right? We take what we need and toss the rest out. It's okay. You know, that's what I like for new people. If they just hear one thing, you know, that'll get them to come back. You know, what a reward, you know, and it's their gift to start their journey, hopefully, for their years of recovery. But again, thank you so much for listening. And I hope I didn't put anybody to sleep or bore you too much. Thank you.